Hello everyone and welcome to this week's Big Boat interview. My name is Stuart Campbell and this week we are taking you back to the recent Superyacht Design Festival in Cortina, Italy and the very last session of the entire event when I got the chance to sit down with none other than Tim Hayward to talk about six of his most iconic projects. Pelorus, Kogo, Symphony, Mayan Queen, Quantum Blue and the very first Amels 171. For each boat, Tim talks through their conception, the clients, and some of the amazing designers he's collaborated with. So without further ado, here is Tim Hayward, straight from the Superyacht Design Festival in Cortina.
Nice of you to turn up.
When you get to be as old as I am, you have to make sure you plan ahead and visit the cloakroom. This is nice to see the hardcore yacht industry people here. Not the skiers.
No. Tim, it's quite a challenge, isn't it? Because your back catalogue is, well, timeless and legendary. But we have asked you to pick six boats from your portfolio that, it's like picking a favourite child, I suppose, isn't it? But
it
you
is.
Have managed to choose six.
I have, but to be honest, you asked me to choose five.
No.
And I got to five and I thought, oh, shit, what am I going to do now? There's still one more to go. So there's six. Six I hope you'll find of interest. Whether you'll recognize them or not is another matter. But they are six projects which I'm very pleased with because they've given me something to do. And they've given a lot of work to the industry, the yards. And I think all of these that I've chosen, I've subcontracted the interiors to the usual suspects. Vanessa and I have worked with about 10 different interior design companies now because our projects got so large. And as you know, as many of you, I hope, know, Vanessa and I are the whole company. So if delegation is the secret to success, then I'm not successful.
Well, actually, before we kick on with number one, perhaps for the younger designers, everyone will be very familiar with you, but for some of the younger designers, perhaps who aren't so familiar about your start in the industry, I wonder if you could just talk about briefly working with John Bannenberg and joining that studio.
Yeah. I was fortunate in that I came out of college and had to find a job, and somebody said, oh, there's a designer in Chelsea, you should go and speak to him. And I rang them up and they said, you could come tomorrow. So I spent all night drawing yachts. The biggest yacht was 6 meters. I had no concept of the big yacht world. And I'm fortunate that I found a job with John. And I loved it. I loved the way that this industry puts all together, all the engineering, the craftsmanship, every aspect of yacht building, which I find interesting. And I get to travel to exciting places and meet interesting people. So it was something I thought, I like this, I'll make this a career. And I did a 20-odd year apprenticeship with John, which I enjoyed immensely. And John would give me the freedom to go and meet the client to begin with and then develop the project and then work on the details. And I enjoyed it immensely. And then I took a decision with Vanessa said she'd help me for a year. She's still there. John had taken over control of an Australian shipyard. And I thought, for an independent designer, I'm not sure that's the right thing to do. So I chose that as the time to set up on my own. And we set up in 1996. And it's been a roller coaster ride since then. And I'm fortunate that Vanessa allows me to spend, I don't know, 18 hours a day drawing, which I still enjoy. Don't do so much now. I'm trying to slow down and successfully slowing down. But it has been a fantastic career, and it still is. So the young designers, which, where are they? Where's the young designers? There they go. They're a great group of people, and they've done remarkably well this year in the competition. And I really wish them well. Can't give them any jobs, but I will recommend them to our the usual suspects. Yeah.
Well, let's start by talking about one of your best known boats. You designed it with your great friend Terry.
Yep.
So why have you chosen Polaris?
Polaris was a really groundbreaking yacht for us. I was approached by the client to add two guest cabins to his existing boat, which was Coral Island, which is now called something else. And I don't really want to talk about it because it offends me, that boat. It was an incredible design statement, which has been degraded now, unfortunately. So I tried to fit it in, and the only way I could add two guest cabins without lengthening the boat was to delete one of the tenders. And the client said, oh, no, I can't do that. Design a new boat for me, Tim. So that was a great opportunity. And on the screen behind me, if that's what's on behind it, yeah, that's the preliminary sketch I did of the boat. And I'm pleased to say that that concept, that initial sketch, actually, it's not made in steel, but nothing really changed. This is the presentation drawing I did to the client. And this was at the end of last century, 1999. And I'd already looked at what color I should recommend because, I knew the client liked that color. I like to keep the hull color a different color than the superstructure because it extenuates the length of the boat. And I do feel that the longer line is more attractive. And I suppose I've been involved with clients because the aesthetics, an attractive looking boat, to me is the most important thing. And I think clients respond to that well. The painting was by a very, very good graphic painter called Vic Carlos, who's passed away now. And when when we were very young, we used to buy Airfix plastic kits to make planes and cars. He did all the color visuals on the front of the box. Remarkable guy. So this was the painting that I took to the client. I knew the client was interested in diving, so consequently it's a kind of underwater view as well. And I'm pleased to say he was impressed with that. And then if you jump from that visual to the next, this is the boat completed. This was taken down in Cornwall by a Cornish friend designer of mine. And this is the boat in the Pacific. The photograph is taken from one of the limousine tenders. In the limousine tender is Terry Disdale and myself, and that's the shot of the boat. The tender on Polaris, it's interesting for me that the boathouse had four specially designed tenders in it, and each of the tenders had hydraulic legs and a little stainless steel flap in the deck with a socket. So when the boats came on board, you pressed a button on the side and the legs came out. So there was no chocks. And then when the boats all went in the water, you had this vast area, which then the client would have incredible parties in it, you know, with discos and bands. And he was a great party giver. So it was good fun. Here's some details of the top, the sun deck, and the aft owner's deck. And what's the one in the bottom? Oh, it's a teak top bollard, isn't it? I wanted to make the bollard something a little more interesting than just all stainless steel.
So they could act as seats, right, as well?
They can, yeah.
It's a very famous photo, isn't it?
That's a famous shot. I had to Photoshop a little bit of it because, unfortunately, the crew hadn't noticed that one of the underwater light bulbs had gone out. So, and this you can see when we were planning the underwater lighting, I thought, well, we've got this great big bulbous bow out the front. Let's have some lights on top of it to illuminate the bow. And I'm pleased to say they did that. And that was the first time I believe it's been done. Numerous boats that are not to my design now have that feature. And like Isambard Kingdom Brunel, if I've improved other people's design, so I'm pleased to hear that. Pleased to do it.
And Polaris, you've chosen these following boats as follow-on or These were inspired by Pelorus.
These were, yeah, they were inspired in some sense, yes, but they were actually directly related. Up on the top up here, of course, we've got Corinthians 7. And I know Michael Bremen is here, but Peter's not, is he? He's working. Good. So we have confidentiality agreements on all our contracts. And I got a phone call from somebody in Peter's office who happened to be called Peter. I don't know who it was, but he was called Peter. And he said, I've just shown the drawing of Pelorus to another client and they want it. So we had to kind of divorce the two designs. And wherever I could, I made Corinthians 7 slightly different. But because of the build process, Corinthians 7 came out first. But she was actually a follow-on to the design. And then we've got the first Stilbar and Radiant, which were real sister ships to Pelorus, technically. And then because of the success of Pelorus, a client came to us and wanted something similar but bigger. And then another client came to us and wanted even bigger. And both these two boats have what I call the belt line, which is this curvature coming down over the hull, over the great slab of the bow. And it always looks to me like, you know, it's this vast wall of steel and we need more details to it. So that's why I added that, which was inspired by a 1930s warship, which is moored in London, the Belfast. It's got this same thing, but it's stepped down and it's the armor plating on the hull. So that's where I get inspiration from, looking backwards.
I wonder if you could just quickly tell the story about Radiant as well and not recognizing
her. Oh, right. Yeah, we were in Istanbul at one of your do's and we were cruising up the Bosphorus, is it? And a member of the people on board said, oh, there's a nice big boat. I said, oh, yes, that's very nice. And they said, do you know anything about it? And I said, no, I don't think so. And then we got a little closer and I sat to tap them on the shoulder. I said, terribly sorry, that's one of ours, yes. My brain is not as receptive to the memory as it used to be. Yeah.
So from 114.5 meter Pelorus to 71.71 meter Kogo. Tell us about this boat.
Well, this is another boat which is related to Pelorus because the client had a team of friends and advisors. One of them was a remarkable guy called Mansour Ogier, who owned TAG and also owned, I think, 49% of McLaren. A really fabulous guy, remarkable man. And he wanted a boat of, is it 71.71 meters?
Yep.
And he would never tell me why he wanted that length, but that's what he wanted. So this is a design from, I can't read the date, but it's probably 2000 and...
I think it says three?
Maybe 2003, yeah. And this, believe it or not, is an exploration yacht with an ice-class hull and pod drives, diesel electric. So this was kind of...
Ahead of its time.
Maybe ahead of its time. She's still sailing proudly, I'm glad to see. I saw her on Instagram this week because Burgess have announced that they're working for the owner to sell the boat. So if anyone of you would like a nice explorer boat, there's one on the market. Here's the model of the boat in our studio when we were in Wapping. And it's great to have these models and you pick the thing up and get onto the plane, you know, to go and visit the client and the problems you have with customs to get through. But we get there in the end. And another Vic Carlos painting of the boat, not in the Mediterranean, as you can see.
And this was another collaboration with Terry.
Yes, Terry did a very, very nice interior for this boat. Yeah, I've known Terry for a long time and we met in a bar in Chelsea to discuss working together. And I convinced him that it was the right thing to do for his career. Yeah, we had fun on that boat. And these are the outside areas. Because I did the initial design and the GA. And then I do all the detail of the exterior, and then there's the crew accommodation and the wheelhouses, which I love doing. And then Terry would refine the interior. Where is he? Is he here? There he is. There he is. So Terry would, he wouldn't change anything of my design on the interior. Nothing at all. Few little tweaks. And this is the aft upper deck area, which has a stone deck, which is nice. We talk about trying to be sustainable, so let's not have teak, let's have stone. And we're going back 20 years, so.
Again, ahead of its time.
Yeah. We try to be sustainable, but sustainable means something different to me than everybody else. Sustainable to me means keeping our company going and also keeping the shipyards going. You know, I can sit and draw pretty boats all day, or what I think is pretty, but I need the shipyards to build them, and I need the shipyards to keep in business. You know, I have worked with yards that unfortunately have folded, and it's usually been due to bad management. And they're under pressure to accept projects which they actually have agreed to build without having enough money to do it. It's a dangerous business, and you can, you know, when yards go under, a lot of people lose their jobs, and it's a tragedy. So I try and give the clients exactly what they want and to my best ability. But at the same time, I gently push the shipyards to do something wonderful, but also to not let them fall over the edge. You know, Michael is here. He's still got a job, so I think we're doing all right.
And Kogo led on to these further projects.
Yes.
Planet Nine, another explorer, Baton Rouge.
Yeah. Baton Rouge was for a French gentleman, who Martin Bouygues, who was a close friend of Mansour Auger. And Mansour brought him to the shipyard one day. And I said, yeah, do you have a yacht? So, oh, yes, we have a 40-footer or something. And I said, well, you know, maybe you should think about something a little bit bigger. You know, children are growing up. And we had a lovely project with him. RWD did the interior. And then another member of the team of the owner of Prolorus wanted to build some boats. And we did two designs for him. One is Planet Nine, and the other was called the Icon 280, but she's left Icon now and gone to another shipyard in Turkey, so she'll probably have a new name shortly. That's a boat I designed 15 years ago, and it's still not finished. So these young designers, don't expect everything to happen tomorrow. You know, it takes time. And then we have Symphony, which kind of led on because the clients had seen my work. They'd seen Corinthia 7, and they wanted something like that. But I've been asked that on occasions. You know, they say, we like that boat. Could you do one for us like that? And I say, well, yeah, but that was designed at least 5 years ago. If it's out now, it was designed 5 years ago. And we've learned a little since then, and we can make it a little better, you know. And so Symphony was the next big project we did. This was with Royal Van Lent, as I'm sure we all know. And it was great for me to go back there because I'd been to Van Lent's when I worked for John, kind of maybe 30 years before. I think there were people at the launch ceremony, there was young guys in the shipyard, and I said, you know, I was last here before you were born. So that's the original concept drawing. And the original model outside our studio. And I'm pleased to say the client was very receptive. And we started doing the details and the interior. Interior was done by François Zuretti, who was here yesterday, and received a great, well-earned reward. And this was the presentation to the client. This is a Vic Carlos background. Unfortunately, he hadn't passed away, but he was very, very ill at that time. And he said he couldn't finish it for me. And I said, well, don't worry, just send me what you've got. And I'll put a picture of the boat in it. So I did the boat. Vic did the beach and the seascape and the landscape and the skyscape. And that was presented to the client, and the client was 99% happy.
Well, there were some interesting other design sketches. For instance, it was presented with an axe bow as well, but that didn't make it through.
It was. He was kind of saying, you know, what's the most modern thinking? And I said, well, you know, this is in fact what I call a scimitar bow, because it's got a curve to it like a scimitar sword. And I said, you know, we could do this. And you can see my concept sketch for the mast. I wanted to do a kind of whale tail mast, which is not something I normally do, because I like masts to be kind of vertical. I don't necessarily want the boat to look like it's doing 40 knots when it's in the harbor. But anyway, that was the concept. He liked that. He didn't like the scimitar bow. We stayed with the clipper bow. This is a photograph of the finished mast. And not only did I want a whale tail, I wanted an indication of the water passing either side of the tail. And I'm very pleased with that. I suppose I'm very pleased with everything I've done, aren't I? Okay, so here's two drawings. Here's two drawings. The client again was pushing. He wanted a golf tee. And we had two rescue boats to store as well. So I lengthened the upper deck and took that right aft to the swimming pool. And we've got the boat stored just forward of where you see the ensign. And there's a golf tee there. And taking the deck aft enabled us to put glass screens on the side of the hull. And these are manually operated screens. There's about 8 or 10 of them, and they all slide back forward. So you can sit on the aft deck and be completely protected.
And the hull was largely built, wasn't it, when these buttresses were added to the...
Yes, thank you for using the word buttress. That's what they are, flying buttresses. Some people use a terrible phrase, fashion plates, and I hate that. It's disgraceful. Yeah, so she's got... You can see the overall effect is to lengthen the hull yet again, or to lengthen the superstructure, because the hull really reads as the blue, the deep blue. So on deck, looking aft, this is the view you see looking at the pool.
This is a bit further up the boat, isn't it?
Yep, this is upper deck looking forward. And we've got, this is the top deck looking back. Same deck. Yeah, same deck. And here's the wheelhouse. The wheelhouse, I love doing wheelhouses, and this was a particularly successful wheelhouse, I think. I've done wheelhouses nearly throughout all my career, and the owner of Al Macabre said, you'll do the wheel. I said, yes, leave it to me. I shall do a mixture between the Starship Enterprise and a Bentley. And when I finished it, he walked in and he said, you've done it. And I put a very comfortable sofa on one side, and he told me afterwards that was his favorite seat on the whole yacht.
What is it about wheelhouses that gives you such satisfaction?
It's the inclusion of the technical aspect, the engineering, the function, all of it, really. You know, it's the center of the boat as far as I'm concerned. Okay, it's not the owner's cabin, which may be the center of the boat for the client. But for me, it's a very technical and functional area, which I really like to look at and do in detail. This is a particularly lovely photograph of the boat in Amsterdam. The name of the photographer is Van Oosen, I think.
Tom Van Oosen,
yeah. And I love the fact that you've got this work of art of glossy paintwork and refinement and polished stainless steel against this backdrop of the industry in Holland. So it's a lovely juxtaposition, I think.
And selection number 4, Mayan Queen.
Mayan Queen. Okay, this Mayan Queen came to us because the client had seen, I think, Al Macabre, and said, again, you know, like something like that. Not as big, though, Tim, not as big. Yeah, we can do smaller. So a very, very pleasant guy, Mexican guy, who sadly has passed away, but his family still use the boat. She was built in Bloemenvos, and built very well. Bloemenvos was a superb shipyard, and still is, but now it's under the flag of Michael Bremen, Lursen. Sorry, Michael. Sorry. So this was the original plan and profile drawing. The concept sketch is there in the front as well. And this is a visual I did with Vic Carlos. This was a Vic Carlos visual. And she's going past a man-made island in Croatia. And I'd found out that the client was on his existing boat on his birthday. And they sailed past this island, and the captain had asked the monks on the island what time they would ring the bells. And they said, we could ring them at 1 o'clock. So he made sure the boat came past at 1 o'clock. And the bells rang, and the client broke down in tears. So when we were going to do a visual to present it to him, I thought that was the most spectacular location. And he broke down in tears when he saw it. So.
And am I right in thinking, because Vanessa has a superb knack for naming these projects as
Oh, yes.
Was Mayan Queen one of hers?
No, that was the client, to be honest. But because it's Mayan Queen 4, So his previous boats. But Polaris, Kogo, Topaz. What else, Vanessa?
Symphony,
yeah. These are all names that Vanessa came up with. Marine Dictionary in hand, she would. So while she was doing the accounts and the entertainment bookings, she would also come up with the names. His shots of her in the wind tunnel. We were very, very concerned about the exhausts and not having exhaust smells on the boat. Some clients have had this problem in the past, including Alma Carb. That's why she's got such a big central exhaust system. And we played with this and made it 99.9% successful.
And you're particularly proud of the detailing on this boat, aren't you?
Yeah, it's detailing that we, the boat is a million details, and that's just the outside. On the inside, it's 2 million details. That's why Terry looks so old now. But but here you can see the Mr. Balieris' B logo, which he had for his store and on his plane and all that. I incorporated that into the handrails. And she came out really well. This is another interesting feature I did. I put a flap on the freeing ports, which means that the exterior line is clean and flush. It's not my original concept. I've seen it on fishing boats, of all things. But I thought I'd bring it into the project, and he liked it. Here's some shots of the exterior areas. I made a mistake in taking the complete color swatch of man-made stone to a meeting with the client because I wanted a beige stone bar on the back of the sun deck. And Madame said, I like the red. I thought, oh, no. But the end result was the red bar. And now they would always say, we'll meet before dinner at the red bar. So they were happy. And I think as we touched on in previous talks, previous lecturers have said how clients like to have some input so that they can say, that's my little bit of design work. Yeah.
Another innovation.
Yeah, this was interesting. We were talking, he's obsessed with, just like most of our clients, of being close to the water. And we know from the wonderful lecture we had this morning about being close to the water and how beneficial that is to you. So we were looking at, I was in a meeting in Mexico City and we were talking about it. And to get the tenders out, the cranes have got to go a long way over a flap that opens downwards. So I thought, well, why can't we have what I call a ring door so that the actual door that opens is within a ring. So consequently, the door is locked in the ring and the ring opens upwards and the tender's launched. But then you can shut the door, lock the ring in place, and then open the center part of the door down, and now you've got a dining platform. Because we designed several collapsible dining tables, because he would say, right, we'll have dinner tonight on the aft platform, or we'll have it on the foredeck, or on the back of the sun deck, or even on the sun deck roof. And these collapsible and foldable tables would find a home all over the boat. This is another lovely shot in Alaska. The last time I saw the boat and the last time I met the client, I was in Alaska for a design meeting. But stunning place.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous photo.
Yeah.
Choice number five.
Oh, before I just one thing about the ring door. I presented that concept during the build phase, and Blumenvoss said, no, it's too difficult, too difficult. And then I think 10 years later, the boat goes to Lursen, and Lursen said, yeah, we can do this. So it was built during the refit. So thank you for that, Michael.
Another lesson.
Yeah, another lesson. 104-meter
quantum blue.
Yeah, this is another. This one's good for the young designers, because what happened was I got a phone call from the client, and he said, we'd like you to design a boat. I said, oh, that's very kind, sir. I'm a bit busy at the moment, but, you know, if I come and meet with you. No, Tim. I've already signed a contract with the shipyard to say we're going to build your design. And I had 4 weeks to actually design the boat and then meet with the client, get him to sign off on it, and then start construction. So it was a very rapid design. But I'm very pleased with what we achieved, and the client still owns the boat, and everybody's happy, and the shipyard did a wonderful job. The lines are, I think, original, but they've got that feminine athleticism, which is what I like to call the kind of rounded forms. And there's, I'm going to tell on Lursen's now. In midships, just at the waterline, you can see a big stainless steel exhaust cowling. And during the build, the engineers came and said, we have a problem. The stabilizers, we're fitting new stabilizers, the bigger stabilizers, and they're outside the shadow of the hull. So we need a kind of fender to protect them. So that's why we have that. So I was pleased that Lursen's engineers fitted the bigger stabilizers, because it gave me the opportunity to add that feature, which I adapted and echoed in the tenders, because all of these boats have got tenders that, you know, I've either designed or I've designed with, you know, other designers in the project.
You ended up owning one, didn't you?
Yes. We have an 11-meter boat from Pelorus, which it was the new owner, the second owner, who at that time owned a football club in Chelsea. He said, oh, yeah, it's a Playboy's boat. I don't want that. So they decided to sell it. And we made an offer for it. And they said, it's worth 10 times that. And I said, yeah, but I can't afford 10 times that. You know, this is what I could afford. And they said, no, we'd rather give it away. Well, I don't mind if you want to give it away. But they came back and they were building another boat in Blumenvoss, I think. And they said, we're not happy with the aft end. Could you do a concept for the aft end? So I took a day out and I did 6 concepts for them and gave it to them. And then they gave us the boat in lieu of payment. And we've had it for 10 years, 12 years. But we've never really used it as much as we should. And it's in England, so the weather's not all that exciting.
Well, if you're looking to give it away.
Yeah. Well, if you're interested, it's on the market. This is a louvered glass ceiling area above the top deck, which it was very difficult to conceive for the engineering guys, because each of the glass panels is curved. You know, I don't do straight lines very well. No. I had a ruler once, but I bent it just to make it more exciting. But no, she's a very nice boat, very pleased with it. I lengthened the bridge wings, as you can see, to make them a more sculptural form. Bridge wings are something which I think are where the form is following the function, which I think is important. And I also added an overhead, a roof to that area, which many captains have said thank you for doing that, because they don't always park the boats in the sunshine.
No. And last but not least,
the AML 7171. This is going back a few years, as all my work goes back a few years, but 2004, I was approached by AMLs to design a boat which they were going to build in six years. And I tried to create something at 171 feet, which actually incorporated all the forms that I like from the bigger boats. And this was the concept drawing. The next is a concept painting. This was presented to the shipyard. And Cordarman looked at it and he said, yeah, we're going to do it. So we began. The next image shows the yacht under construction, the first one. And we kind of got to six and they kept going. Laura Sessa was doing the interiors, which she did very well. She's had to go skiing. Oh, she's still there. Good girl. So, the interiors, Laura created a different style, really, for each one, depending on the clients. And we ended up building 25. Nobody, I don't think, ever thought that would be that successful. But, it was a great start to our career with AMLs. These are sketches of the outside details and photos of the outside details. The sun deck, which on some boats was completely open. On some, we'd put a glass screen at the front and the back and the sides to make it into an air-conditioned area. Lovely photograph of the boat. Again, not in the Mediterranean. All of our boats are true world cruisers. Now, this went so well that AMLs came back and said, oh, we'd like to do something a bit bigger with an upper deck as well, or a sun deck enclosure. So this is the next one we did for them. And I think it said, did we build four? We built four of those. This has got a winch interior. I think is Jim still here? Jim is here. Andrew has departed. So I can tell the truth about Andrew. He's rubbish, really. Jim's done it all.
Jim does all the
Jim
work.
Jim done it all. Jim did the work. Yeah, we built four of those. Then we got a little bigger. This is a 72-meter. And again, it's a Jim Dixon interior under the Andrew Winch flag. And we've built eight. And I think we've got one more still in production. So there'll be nine of those. So that's a pretty good series for a 72-meter boat.
Phenomenally successful. Yeah. And then another example of your Scimitar bow.
Yeah, so this is one of my favorite boats. This is Event. And I created the design with a normal clipper bow. And I said to the yard, you know, if you really want to push the envelope, it would look great with a Scimitar bow. And they took the drawings away and thought about it. And then they came back and said, yeah, we're going to do it. And I was very pleased with the end result of that. And we built four of those. And then this is the last boat of our series with AMLs. And this was inspired by a swan with the wings kind of arcing back. And we have built four again of those.
And you've done Pascal and Andy work with you on some of these.
Yep. This one's has Pascal and Andrew did an interior, and Laura Pomponi did an interior, and I'm not sure who did the third one.
We'll look it up after.
Look it up, please. Look it up. Google it. Right. And this was the big one from AMLs. This is the 80, she was 82 meters, and she's been extended by 6 meters to increase the size of the swimming pool and the sauna underneath. And I'm very pleased with the end result of that boat.
I remember you telling the section at the end, you think, has helped the lines of the boat.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I think it's true of possibly every boat. If you do a concept, you do a design, everybody's happy, and then you just kind of add a little bit, you know, just kind of makes it a little more elegant. When I presented Topaz to the client, they said, oh, it's very nice, but how can you make it more beautiful? And I said, give me 1 meter on the stern and 2 meters on the bow. And the client turned to Peter, who was there, and said, how much will it cost? And I said to Peter, it's the cheap part. It's just the steel work. And the client accepted and paid for it. So that was that.
But that's actually not all, is it, Tim?
That's all, folks. Thank you.
Hang on.
No. Thank you. I never know when to stop.
So what's going on here?
Well, 5 years ago, believe it or not, we lost 2 years because of COVID. 5 years ago, I was approached by Vempe, the great German chronometer and watchmaker. And they said, we're thinking of building a chronometer to celebrate our 150th anniversary. And we thought we'd get a yacht designer to do it. You know, could you do something? And I said, yes. And they said, could you come and talk to us about it? And I said, certainly. So I booked a flight and I prepared sketches to take to the meeting. And the first thing that went through my mind is that, you know, you can't base it. I wanted something that reflected travel and chronometry history as well to some extent. And I thought, well, I can't make the case look like Marco Polo or something. And then I thought, well, the coconut is a great natural traveler. It drops in the sea, floats to another island. And the kind of queen or empress of the coconut world is the Coco de Mer, which I subsequently found out doesn't travel very well. But I love the shape and the form. So I developed the design to have this Coco de Mer case, and I presented that to Vempe, and they kind of weren't that kind of enthusiastic, I didn't think. So I came back, and they said, come and see us again in a month's time, and I did another design for them. I thought the cubed design, which is a faceted form, would be easier to make, and so I presented that to them on the second visit, and they said, oh, but we like the first one. I said, well, thank you for telling me. So then they said, oh, we like the second one too. We'll do them both. So they've put them into production. I'm very pleased to say that I introduced Vempe to Metrica, who have made the cases. And unlike other chronometers, we have a lid, and then we have two doors that open up so you can see the chronometer in its enclosure. And then there's a mechanism whereby you can tilt the clock towards you and lock it. So you don't have to kind of look over into the box to see it. And you pull out a drawer in the front where the key lives. And pulling out the drawer releases a mechanism so you can lift the whole chronometer out of its box and put it on the table, which is another first, I think.
It's a beautiful design.
So they're going to hit the market in, I think, the end of this month. And now that really is the end.
Well, actually, before we end, we do have to wrap it up. But in 2021, we couldn't do this event for obvious reasons, but we did still award a lifetime achievement Neptune that year. Tim, unfortunately, couldn't accept it in person on stage. So I wonder if we could all stand now and recognize Tim's lifetime achievement award in 2021.
I'd like to clap all the shipyards that have made my pathetic drawings into reality. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this Big Boat interview. I hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget to tune in every week for news and updates with the Boat Briefing podcast and further sessions from the Superyacht Design Festival. This episode was mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe. And we'll see you next time.